Oh boy, it's a Charles Bronson movie, and this thing is quite fantastic. It's Death Wish 3. I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Zanek.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin is on assignment.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in to our fine program. As always, if this is your first time with us, welcome. Take your coat off. Just stay a while.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Whoa, one shoulder at a time. No. Do it slowly. Do it sexy.
Oh, Jamie Lee Curtis, this is a very sexy striptease you're doing.
I just rewatched True Lies, and that's really where I was getting that from, totally, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are they watching Death Wish 3 in that movie?
No.
Well, we watched Death Wish 3 for this week's episode. It's from 1985, directed by Michael Winner.
I do think we have to stop and say this is probably one of the longest, this has been on our like to-do list as long as this show has even existed.
Yeah, I think that's about straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was like 2010 you suggested like a Death Wish month.
Yes.
And it didn't come to be.
Didn't happen. Life got in the way.
Well, now we're catching up. We're catching up before we die.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the bucket list of We Hate Movies.
And we are starting with what I think is definitely the best Death Wish movie.
What?
Yes.
The first one.
No, that doesn't count. That's a movie. That's talking true. Death Wish movies.
That's true.
Well, two through five.
They made a fifth?
Oh, yeah. Dude, what are you kidding me? Michael Parks is the bad guy in that movie.
It's set in the fashion industry, Eric.
Oh, my goodness. I think I've only watched up to four.
Oh, dude, yeah. You got to get on five.
What is the deal with four? I haven't seen four in a long time. Five I've actually happened to see pretty recently.
I don't really remember.
Okay. Because we watched these movies in college. We went through all five of them.
Yeah.
The first one's a movie. It's you know, you got your Jeff Goldblum, a really problematic rape scene, and then him just shooting up a bunch of people.
That's what that movie is. Actually, the daughter in that movie, played by a woman who taught at our college.
Oh, wow.
She was my wife's senior advisor.
The second one, his daughter gets killed.
Yeah, it's set out in L.A., and then she's murdered. The first movie is the wife is murdered, the daughter is spared. But someone finishes the job in part two.
And then this is the third one.
Right.
Which is Paul Kersey, played by our hero Charles Bronson there.
Hello.
You know, this was reminding me of, like, Taken. Like, Liam Neeson kind of started doing this kind of stuff. It's like you get an older actor phasing out of career and life.
Yeah.
And they go and do, like, these ridiculous action movies.
Oh, totally, yeah. Or five of them. Liam Neeson had the wherewithal to stop at three, I think, with Taken.
Yeah, but then he just started calling them other things.
Yeah, and actually, that's true.
Now this is unknown.
Now it's A Walk Among the Tombstones.
Oh, yeah, dude. A Walk Amongst the Tombstones.
Now it's Run All Night.
Oh, whatever it is, I'm coming to get you.
Why did they not? I mean, like the Kevin Bacon movie, Death Note.
Death Sentence,
Death
I believe.
Sentence, that, right. That's coming out. Death Sentence is not as good and didn't spot a franchise.
It didn't, but I still like that movie. It's based off the same book that Death Wish is based off of.
Oh.
And I thought it was okay. You got Kevin Bacon kind of doing the Bronson thing,
uh-huh.
Killing people, killing hoodlums.
No mustache, though.
Nah.
Yeah, that's why it's not good. You need a mustache. You know, Liam Neeson should get one.
Oh, I'd love to see him with a mustache.
And just killing people?
Mm-hmm.
Wiping the blood off
That's what I was saying. This would be a good... It's a good time for Liam Neeson. He's not yet 60.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the time to start a Death Wish franchise. Then by the third one, he'll look old as sin, like fucking Charles Bronson does.
Bronson was 64 years old making this movie.
He felt... like, and the weird thing is, like, the earlier movies, he's an older man. This is when he goes over to old man. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
You get over that hump, and you're just an old man. My fiance said he looked like a koala grandfather, which kind of makes sense.
What does that mean?
Like in a cartoon show, I would be your koala. Come, little koalas, I'm going to tell you a story.
Oh, I thought you meant, I thought that was like a sex phrase.
No.
You know?
Oh, he gave the old koala grandfather. Like, how do you do?
This guy's a total koala.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right?
No, he's not a bear. It's like, gather round, noozles. I'm going to tell you a story.
worry, it's me, Grandpa Noozle.
Exactly.
Let's sit on a tree stump. Uh-oh, here comes a fox. I better kill him. You stay there, innocent Noozles. I'm going to murder some people.
Yeah, he's 64 years old, which makes it even worse when he fucks a woman that's literally half his age in this movie.
Come on.
I did the math with the actors, dude.
Really?
This woman was 32 years old making this movie and making out with Charles Bronson.
And she's younger than me, and she had sex with Charles Bronson.
That's right.
Man, some girls get everything.
So Charles Bronson is taking the bus to this movie in the beginning.
Taking the bus.
I love this sequence because it's the only part of it shot in New York, like at all, right?
Yep. Yep. He takes my exact old commute driving over the 59th Street Bridge.
And then he goes to the Seventh Circle of Hell, also known as Port Authority.
Oh, man. I was shuddering. I was fucking shuddering at the sight of that shithole.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that place.
Of course. How could you not?
Mm-hmm. Did they actually have flaming trash cans to put your genitals in after you use the bathroom? That's the only way to get that off you.
Man, I love that there are like stores in the Port Authority. Like there are downright stores who are like, we want to rent space in the Port Authority. What a complete waste of money.
Oh, hey, you want to eat food? Let's have a sit-down restaurant at the Port Authority. Get out of town.
God, yeah, I love my steak medium rare and smelling of fucking gas fumes from the bus.
Oh, it's just a building full of buses. It's disgusting. Like, how is that legal?
It's outrageous. Keep those buses outside.
It just goes up and up of bus.
Oh, I hate it. So he takes it in to the city.
We intercut with his friend Jolly getting murdered by the gang. Are they called the Creeps? Is that the idea? Is that the gang name?
Maybe that's just his old man term for youngsters.
Oh, the Creeps.
Yeah, I was confused about that. I don't know which is which. Odds are it's the gang name.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it would be a terrible gang name.
And the Creeps.
This is a terribly written movie, so you know.
With the Creeps.
Yeah, exactly. Snap, snap.
So he...
this old man is brutally murdered.
They're asking him, and it seems only him, for protection money, which doesn't make sense. Like, everybody else they're just robbing, but this old man they specifically want protection money from.
Well, no, I think it's just that the other people have, like, paid up.
Oh, they have dues.
He's the one who's not doing it, and what they do in this movie, there's actually kind of like two New York crime things associated with this movie. And the first one is this. When this man is being brutally murdered and he's screaming, he may as well be screaming, "Help, they're murdering me."
Yeah.
Which is what they reference.
Which don't do. Well, scream fire if you're being murdered.
Yeah, totally. They reference the Kitty Genovese murder.
Oh, of course.
Because everyone is like, they cut to a bunch of shots of neighbors in the building all hearing it and not doing anything, which is what her case was about.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Rorschach now.
And then finally, someone's like, oh, we better call the police. What? It's like the ninth family we cut to.
And it's also like, oh, the sounds are going down. I might as well call the police.
Yeah, it sounds like we're coming to an end of this horrendous murder.
But man, that shit still goes on in this city. Did you guys see this going around the internet a few weeks or months ago or whatever the fuck? There was an old lady trying to get out of the subway, and the subway doors closed on her head.
Oh, I just saw something about this the other day.
And she was just, her head was sticking out of the subway doors, and like 50 people were just walking by not giving a fuck.
What happened? I didn't click the link. Did someone stop the train?
I watched it. It's just people walking by, like, not caring. I don't, you know, I think that was the end of the clip. I don't know what happened to her.
Wait, why were they filming it, though? Was it a prank show?
No, it was just funny. Which is, you know, don't lead with your head on the subway. Lead with your feet.
But the idea is nobody stopped. I mean, I don't know.
Also,
I feel like
we need more of this, maybe. Because people holding the doors
have
got to end.
Oh, my God. That is a fucking plague amongst this town, man.
And people will yell, hold the door. I'm like, no, I'm not going to hold the door.
No, I hear that. I step back farther so I don't accidentally hold the door.
But the weird thing is, like, I don't know, like, look, if somebody's screaming, I'm being murdered, yes, I would call the police in my own building. But more often than not in my building, I'm leaving it alone. I've got a guy next door to me doing fucking Turkish train spotting. He's high on horse 24/7, and I leave it alone, man.
This dude that used to live in my building, he's just sit on the stoop smoking crack.
Yeah, sure.
And he's got like a police scanner and a walkie-talkie with his known associates. Man, I'm not getting into that hornet's nest.
Precisely. See something, say nothing.
Exactly for the right, most part. Dude. I have an upstairs neighbor. This apartment, I'm pretty sure we're pushing on like 10 people living here.
Of course.
It's a revolving door.
You get that, and nobody's business. Like, yes, somebody screaming rape, somebody screaming murder. Yes, I will call the police. Anything else, man?
You got to specify. Specify what is happening to you. Don't just scream.
Yes, exactly.
I don't respond well to generic screaming.
Yeah, I mean, you might be in the middle of a coke binge. You might have a.
You could be fucking. I don't know.
Could be fucking night terrors could be happening.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to call the police if you just have night terrors.
You call fucking night terrors?
That's what everybody calls it.
Dude, and by the way, you know who you call if you're having, if you want to interrupt someone's night terrors?
The Scream Police.
Oh.
I was thinking that the only way you can call fucking night terrors is if you're fucking Keith David. Who I'm sure is a very generous lover, but I just feel like it could get scary.
I think it could be very sensual.
Okay.
You know, some of those guys, you'd be surprised, you know? They're real
big
teddy. They're
big burly types?
Big burly types are a lot, you know, they're teddy bears, dude. Teddy bears.
Fucking Brett Ratner, that's a night terror.
Oh, God, yeah. Ugh. Dude, scented oils and shit. Come on.
He's a guy that always has pornography on all the time, and you're like, dude, can you pay attention to me?
Your grandmother's visiting.
Look at this, pornography on that TV. Look at this, it's Tower Heist on this TV.
Look, over here on this third TV, it's the Tower Heist porno parody.
The tower's the dick. You get it?
This guy gets murdered. His friend Charlie gets murdered. And Bronson like gets to the apartment just too late. This wood-paneled apartment, by the way, it looks like a nice log cabin.
Oh, yeah. It's
like a nice nap in this apartment.
I love this apartment.
It looked like a really well-organized VFW hall. You know, it was pretty great.
And it's a light tone wood paneling to paint you a picture. It's not like you get the dark wood paneling and I can see it feeling enclosed, but it's just popping. It's beautiful in this movie. I would love to have an apartment like this.
So
these apartments are huge, by the
they're
way.
They're enormous.
My God. And you know, it'd be worth living in this fictionalized East New York for those apartments.
It's amazing. The apartments in like the Dakota, like the apartments they have in fucking Rosemary's Baby. They're gorgeous.
And, you know, I know it's a crime haven. There's these street gangs, but they're cartoon characters.
Yeah, you're fine.
You're just moving into the Looney Tunes.
You're moving into Toontown.
This does take place in Toontown.
We should also acknowledge the fact that the second we cut away from the Port Authority, that's the last time you see legitimate New York City in this movie.
Welcome to London Town.
Yeah, they just filmed this on like a huge stage in England, or it might have been like a town in England or something. I mean,
right next to Tatooine, apparently.
There is no neighborhood in New York City that looks anything close to this.
There's like church bells everywhere. I'm like, what are we talking about? Where are we? So he finds his friend dead, and immediately the cops snatch him up, which, I mean, by the way, you're doing cold time because he's got a gun on him and everything. Like,
yeah, they don't fuck around with that charge in this city.
He's also using a false name. Like, dude, you're fucked.
Yeah. Well, then they also they get down to the police station, and the guy played by Ed Lauder, Lautner?
Lighter, maybe, or
this guy, he's been in a bunch. Ed Lauder, he's like the police detective or whatever, like the lead guy, and he remembers the story of Paul Kersey, and he's like, oh, you're also that vigilante that we're still technically looking for, so you're going down.
Well, they call him Mr. Vigilante. Was that like his name? Was that like the papers, the New York Post called him Mr. Vigilante?
I didn't get to rewatch the first two movies. I don't remember.
I totally forgot. But what's great about this police guy, he walks into the room when they first nab Paul Kersey, and he's like, who's this dude?
Which is the dude. He says, it's kind of his catchphrase.
He says dude a lot.
Yeah, I
kind
of like it. Yeah, and he's not a guy that looks like he should be saying dude. He looks like Ted's father from Bill and Ted a little bit.
He definitely does look like that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys have been in the same audition room a couple times.
Yep.
Oh, great.
And like Stephen Tobolowsky's two seats over, like, oh, fuck. Hello. I'm here for Ted's father.
Oh, man. That would have been a much different movie.
Stephen Tobolowsky for Ted's father. I'll do a side for that.
So yeah, he kind of like gives him this dressing down, and it's like, you're not going anywhere. We have you here, you know. And you know, Bronson's all like, well, what about my constitutional rights?
The fucking gall on Bronson's like, oh, do you habitually just take away people's constitutional rights? I'm like, you've murdered 100 people at this point.
Yeah, what? You don't have a fucking leg to stand on, old man.
So they put him in the they put him in the tombs. It seems.
Yeah.
The defense attorney, who happens to be this woman that winds up having sex with him, she's like 33 years old, is like, oh, you've got this guy, Paul Kersey, in lockup for days. You know, what are you charging with him? He's like, no charges. So she's like, well, what are you holding him on? Nothing. And he's like, did you feed him? No. And she's like, you know, you just kind of can't do that. He's like, yes, I can. Bye.
Yeah, this woman works for like the she's a defense attorney or something
public defender,
like that.
Yeah,
public defender's office. And so he's in there with these people. He immediately starts beating the shit out of people in these tombs. He beats the shit out of this like kind of big fat guy that comes at him. And this is where we meet Gavin O'Herlihy from Superman 3, among other things.
He looks like a poor man's William Atherton, I was kind of guessing.
Yeah, a little bit.
I believe on our Superman 3 episode, you called him a proto Jake Busey.
Yeah, I mean, it's William Atherton. It was the Ghostbusters audition. It was William Atherton, Gavin O'Hurley, and Stephen Tobolowsky all there waiting.
We need like that chart of man's evolution with all these actors.
So Gavin O'Hurley, one of a few English actors in this movie, because we're fucking making this movie in London.
Oh, I didn't know he was English. He does a good American accent, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you call it a half cowboy.
Oh, he was in that James Bond movie too, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, Never Say Never Again.
That's right. Yeah. In this movie, he's like this gang leader.
Man, the thing that sucks is he's got the worst haircut anyone's ever had.
And they're supposed to be like punk gang people.
And he's pushing 45.
Punk gang people.
That's what they are. They're like punk rockers, but they're also gang members.
You know, I need to see them playing instruments at some point.
You guys should do a band. Get together. Have a band.
That'll get you off the streets and doing something constructive.
But he's got this, it's just a big line shaved in the middle of like a non haircut.
Right, it's like slicked back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look good.
Then he's drawn a line with red lipstick down the middle of his skull, like where the hair part should be.
It's like an anti mohawk, I guess.
Yeah, it's a bit too Mad Max for New York City.
There's a couple of Mad Max looking people in this movie. It's kind of stupid.
Well, the creeps all have like little lipstick on their faces. Like that's right. The idea is like they put like gang paint on their faces because if you're in a gang, you want to always look like you're in that gang, I guess. I guess.
Well, you know, they live in a war zone.
That's true. Speaking of Mad Max.
Right.
So he winds up, he gets into a scuffle with him and he gets out because there is this drop thread in this movie where like someone is supplying the gang with money and resources, but you never see that other piece because like somebody pays his bail and he's like, well, you keep the money coming in, and he's like, "Will do, boss." And I'm like, "Who's this boss?"
He's got some like lawyer that's like also crooked.
Yes,
it goes to nothing.
He also later in the movie he calls up. He's like,
"Yeah, he calls in reinforcements."
To who? What? Who is this guy? Is the kingpin involved?
I think it's the mayor's office, dude.
Oh shit!
I think it's going all the way to the top.
Really?
All the way.
David Margulies as the mayor?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Get me the Ghostbusters.
Get me the creeps. Yes.
That's the way you keep ghosts out, is you keep the streets rampant with gang violence.
So scary that ghosts won't even haunt them.
That's exactly
some guy's
right.
Like trying to call the creeps on their bullshit. Like they're not making it scary out there. I don't know. What you know, because the...
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's like the Ghostbusters. The William Atherton. Yeah, it's got to be a William Atherton.
A William Atherton type, yes.
Yes.
He kind of crosses paths with Gavin O'Hurley, and now they're like sworn enemies kind of a deal.
Well, I wish they showed this scene because he goes... On his way out, he's like, you know what? Watch the 6 o'clock news. I'm going to kill an old lady just for you.
Right.
And I'm like, come on, do it if you're going to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, leader of the creeps. He's kind of just all talk sometimes. And then other times, not so much. Like when he stabs his gang friend in the throat.
That's him. He immediately gets out. And apparently this guy had, like, this guy takes over the gang while he's gone. And he comes back and he's like, this is a sticker and you're the sticky. And he sticks him in the throat.
Yeah.
And everyone cheers. And I'm like, did this guy have no friends? Like, no one is like, oh my God, they killed Jerry.
Oh man, fucking Jerry's taking over the creeps. Can you believe this? Gavin O'Hurley, he's gone for 1 second and Jerry takes over.
No, he's going to get killed tonight. I guarantee it. Watch, watch. You watch.
What is Gavin O'Hurley's name in this movie?
Fraker.
Fraker. Jesus, that sucks. Yeah,
Manny Fraker.
Manny?
They mostly call him Fraker. The Wikipedia said Manny Fraker, but I know that Bronson's like, we're going to get Fraker pretty soon.
Also in this gang, by the way, is, of course, speaking of Ted's dad, is Alex Winter from Bill and Ted.
Oh, of course. And Stephen Tobolowsky's in this movie.
No.
I wish, man.
I auditioned for the Giggler. I didn't get it.
And playing the role of Giggler, Stephen Tobolowsky.
Hello, Stephen. This is David Chen. And Stephen Tobolowsky, you might know as the Giggler in Death Wish 3.
He was the man who played the Giggler in Death Wish 3.
Oh, David, it's so funny you remember me as the Giggler. Anyone enjoys this, but no, I do.
We love Stephen Tobolowsky, friend of the show. We did a podcast with him once.
So Fraker gets out. Yeah, he goes back to this gang meeting, and so Jerry's just like, all right, so here's what we're going to do. We want to diversify this gang's portfolio a little bit. We're going to start moving the territory uptown, and then Fraker comes in. And he's like, stabby, stabby. He stabs. It's not like he slit his throat. He stabs him in the throat.
Which is great. Good move.
It's great. This movie is a 9 on the ridiculous great meter, but it could be a 10 if you got a Tom Savini in here. I need a
really
little bit.
Really gore it up?
Yeah, I would like a little bit more gore. No head explosions, really, which is kind of a problem.
You
for
want
me.
A head explosion.
We're
sure.
Death Wish 3 at this point. By the way, did anyone notice that the first two, it's Death Wish 1, which is just called Death Wish.
Yeah.
We get Death Wish 2, which is the Roman numeral 2.
Yeah.
This is Death Wish 3, which is the Arabic regular degular 3.
Yeah. Do you know why?
But yeah, I thought you could say that.
Well, they did like some study that said like half the population didn't know how to read Roman numerals.
What?
Can you fucking believe that?
What? Really?
Yeah.
That's some crackpot study, which doesn't make sense because so many, like, the Rockies always kept with the classic.
Well, that was a smarter audience.
Yeah, exactly. This is, we're selling this to idiots.
Death Wish I?
Death.
What is that, one of them French arty movies?
Oh, good. Give me a ticket to Death Wish IV. That's what I need.
Keeps me going.
I'm 90 years old.
This detective there, he comes back to Bronson and he's like, all right, look, we know that you're Paul Kersey. We're going to recruit you. I'm going to let you out on the streets. You can go kill all these people you want. Just so long as you report back to me every once in a while is basically the deal.
And there's no deal though. It's not like, okay, these are the guys I'm going to give you a list of people you got to kill because right. These are the people that are doing it. Or even like you got to.
The whole area, the whole neighborhood is forfeit. The cops just want it all gone.
Yeah. Anybody is fair game, which is amazing because also there's no like, if you do, I guess the only incentive is like we'll keep you out of jail.
Yeah,
but that's it. There's nothing else that Bronson's getting out of this except the sheer bonerific joy of murdering people, which he at this point has a healthy taste for.
Of murdering mostly minorities. You have to say that.
Well, we got to also say like how insane that. I don't know, it's not insane, but how diverse this punk gang is.
Yes.
You know, it's like all the leaders of it are white that are, I guess they're gentrifying the neighborhood.
They're coming
they're
in.
They're moving in on. I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's really well mixed. It's like a well-cast Pepsi commercial.
Charles Bronson walking out there. Hey, Giggler, have a Pepsi.
Why, thank you. I wish you played the Giggler.
Join the conversation. It's a refreshing beverage. Protest.
There's, what was I going to say about this? Oh, well, this whole situation of the gang that's weird, though, as far as the casting is concerned, you definitely have a lot of white guys playing Hispanic people.
Yes, you do.
That's definitely going on. Because
you also have white women playing Hispanic people.
That's absolutely correct. But like Alex Winter, definitely just playing an Hispanic man in this movie.
Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi fame, is playing a Latina woman who doesn't even speak English in this movie, right? I think she only has like Spanish dialogue.
That I don't remember. I don't know if it's supposed to be she doesn't speak English or she's shy or whatever.
Yeah, but like,
dude is just like, here's my sister kind of a thing.
Man, whatever. And she's like, they really put a lot of makeup on her to make her look a lot darker than she actually is.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, we'll just call her Maria. That ought to do it.
Yeah. It's a Band-Aid on a fucking fountain, you know, man? It's just not going to stop anything. That lady's white.
So he, like, has his assignment and whatnot. So he goes back to the apartment building. That's, like, his new home base, where he meets his next best bud of all time.
Right. He moves into Charlie's place.
He moves into Charlie's place right here. His tour guide through the building is Martin Balsam, of course, from Mitchell and Psycho and 100 other movies.
And he is out-acting Charles Bronson at every turn.
Well, he's just happy to be there.
Bronson just wasn't super happy with this movie, actually. That's what that like. It's like, this is going in the wrong direction. The first movie was like a real movie. This is... he's reported saying, like, I shoot a gang of people on motorcycles with a machine gun. Whatever.
That's a little over the top.
Yeah, I mean, I love this movie, but Bronson, you can tell that he doesn't like being in this movie a lot.
Yeah, it's sort of weird. He's smiling even less than usual.
they get to talking. They're both in their late 60s, and he's like, oh, why don't you just stay in that? You know, that your buddy's apartment is going to remain open because he's dead, and
rent is paid through the end of the month.
So why don't you just flop there?
Well, not that anyone's clamoring to move in.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I could just sleep. The bloodstain doesn't bother me all that much.
Turns out it's haunted, though. That'd be great if his buddy Charlie was haunting
this
apartment.
That would be the natural progression of this series, is for some ghosts to come out after him, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's a true death wish.
Right, like Death Wish 6, like The Haunting, and then it's just like everyone he's killed.
Yes.
You get Goldblum back as like a specter.
I like this.
Oh, is it because they open the containment unit?
Yes, exactly.
Get me Charles Bronson.
So Martin Balsam, in like this glorious scene of exposition, like explains the entire gang to him. They're just like looking at these people out the window, spying on everybody.
The weird thing is, I was unclear on Bronson's motivation, Kersey's motivation, because he's like, I'm retired. I don't do that anymore. Is he lying to the police, or is he like actually trying to quote unquote go straight, but whoops, as luck would have it, he has somebody else to avenge?
Well, I think it's a thing where he's a victim of circumstance, because his whole thing was like trying to get revenge on like the people that ruined his family.
Sure.
And that chapter in his life is closed after the second movie.
Because he has no family left. Yeah.
Right. They're all murdered. And he like
his family was canceled, essentially.
Right. And he like avenges, you know, he's avenged at this point both the wife and the daughter. So he's like, well, I don't have anyone left to avenge. And then his friend Charlie, who I guess is his next closest thing to family.
He just happens to be visiting Charlie. And then Charlie's murdered instantly. Wherever he goes.
Yeah, it's not good.
There's death.
What's kind of weird, though, is like it's kind of weird that Paul Kersey, former super successful architect, is friends with this guy. Because in the first movie, it's kind of like, oh, we live in a nicer area because I'm, you know, this successful architect. And meanwhile, then he's just got this buddy who's living in like the dump part of town.
Well, that's the weird thing.
I don't understand how they'd be friends.
Bronson doesn't sort of make a ton of sense, at least in the first one, because it's like a yuppie got driven to the brink kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to just a one-man war machine.
By the time you get to this movie, he's definitely more of like a working Joe kind of a guy, but that's not what this character started at all.
Why does he get back into the architect game?
Yeah, did he lose his license? I don't know.
You know, he should be like designing one of those like Dr. H.H. Holmes's murder house.
Oh, okay.
You hear about that guy?
Oh, yeah. I know all about that guy, man. You better believe it.
Mm-hmm.
America's first serial killer?
Yeah, old time Chicago.
Oh, shit, dude.
There's a bunch of bad documentaries on that guy. Don't worry about it.
I think I've seen all of them.
But like, seriously.
Devil in the White City, man.
Death Wish 7. And that's the one where he builds a murder house. Like, because this is where like all the Kevin McAllister shit from Home Alone originates, I think. Like,
yes.
They start doing booby traps in these apartments.
Booby traps.
outright booby traps.
That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, I think you're just laughing at the idea that they're making booby traps.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Just fucking hilarious.
You were laughing at
booby. Well, no, it's amazing. Well, I was kind of laughing at booby, let's be real. But no, it's kind of amazing because like by the time we're at this movie, it's come so far from that first movie where he like first fires that gun on the stairs and he kills a person and he feels fucking terribly conflicted about it. And it's like, what have I done? This movie, it's just like, all right, now when this board flies up, there's a nail in it and it's going to hit him in the face. Like he went to fucking survivalist camp or something.
And these paint cans are going to give Joe Pesci a little trouble.
You're going to step on all these broken Christmas ornaments.
Do you give up or are you thirsty for more?
Forget that Angels with Filthy Souls movie. You just should have put in a fucking Death Wish
movie.
That
would have been made a lot more sense, Columbo. Like, that's what you do here, man. Or Straw Dogs. I mean, there's a lot of booby traps.
Yeah, Straw Dogs is Home Alone.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody see that Straw Dogs remake?
No.
Yeah, just checking. Just checking.
How stupid was that? Hollywood making their own booby traps.
Box office booby trap.
It is kind of like a bear trap, isn't it?
Wait, I'm sorry. That's sort of a great idea for our next podcast. We're just calling it Box Office Booby Traps.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just cinema's bad ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's the same show, but it's a better title. Yeah. If someone ever sues us for We Hate Movies, we'll go to Box Office Booby Traps.
It was a nice B plan. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Box Office Booby Traps.
He was the man in Box Office Booby Traps.
No, and then instead of saying, and we hate movies at the start of the episode, I'd go, and the trap is set.
Oh,
this is getting better by the minute.
I think we're going over. I think
we hate movies is now Box Office Booby Traps.
Yeah, check your RSS feeds next week. We'll see how this goes.
I don't know, man. There's too many hoodies printed.
Yeah, that's true. We got to change those posters. So he starts sleeping in this guy's apartment, and he realizes that he's going to kill this entire gang. And he starts getting like mail away guns from I don't even know what Soldier of Fortune magazine he's getting this off of.
I don't have any idea. I think it's Nicolas Cage from that Gunrunner movie that he came.
Oh, a
Lord of War.
Yeah, yes. I think he's got a Lord of War kind of guy.
Right, and that was in Brooklyn too.
It's just
was it?
I think it was down Russia way.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like Brighton Beach area?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's getting it from some Stars and Bars Soldier of Fortune magazine.
I think it's the same dude that Michael Douglas kind of does business with in Falling Down.
Oh, absolutely. Give it to me. Give it to me.
Yeah, that dude.
This needs something like that. You need to have, like, show me like an Army Navy surplus store owner that like becomes sympathetic with the idea of killing everyone in this neighborhood.
Totally. He's like a Vietnam veteran. Maybe he's like Herman from The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's vicious like, neo-Nazi.
Well, that's the thing. And then you can like draw a straight line and like Bronson's like, whoa, whoa, I don't go in for all that. I kill everybody.
I just want your guns. I'm not looking to buy any of those flags.
Exactly.
Speaking of those flags, did you guys notice that some of the bikers in the Creeps do have swastikas on their helmets?
Oh, what a shock.
Yeah, that's the Frank Miller wing of the gang.
It's just bizarre to me.
It's really... Well,
you've got a diverse gang.
Exactly.
It's like very diverse and it's very, very nice, you know, equal opportunity.
Yeah, totally.
For your murder gang. And then you're wearing a swastika. Like, this has got to not sit well with some of your fellow.
Someone in the costume department wasn't paying attention, I feel, is what that is. And it's like, well, we already made the jacket.
Wait. I'm forgetting my punk rock guys.
Yeah, I mean,
The Sex Pistols wore swastikas because it was associated with they rebranded it as loser.
So he's like kind of gathering his supplies and he keeps telling like Martin Balsam, like, ooh, I got a good mailbox shipment coming pretty soon. Don't worry about it. Got
to go to the postal pickup office 6 times in this movie.
Yeah, like you don't see anyone make, no one's making deliveries, right?
No, well, they're not going to that town.
I could use a sequence where these motorcycle punks like commandeer a UPS truck.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, and you know now they got all the ammunition.
That's
like
true.
Cut off the supply line.
That's true. Oh,
but
yeah.
That's why he's got a PO box. That and to keep the law off of him. You know what I mean? Like you don't want to put your actual address on something.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
There's postal police. Is that a new thing?
What, postal
police?
No, there must have always been postal cops.
Man, you know, I see you're in a post office, and then you see one walk by, and he's got a gun, and I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't get it personally, but whatever.
You got to be sure, man.
That letter tried to get away.
That letter drew on me first.
So the...
Oh, there's a great line right here where, like, you know, he's like, all right, Martin Balsam, here's my plan, and this, that, and the other thing. And Martin Balsam's like, all right, great, let's go, buddy. And he goes, Bronson goes to him, you take it easy, Bennett. This is my problem. Great line that starts the butchery.
Well, he's in the building. He's like, hey, Martin Balsam, I smelled something good on the first floor. How do we get in on that? And I'm like, dude, what is your problem? Like, cook your own dinner. Order something.
Well, that's life on the streets,
order,
man.
Order something. There's nothing.
Seamless is not doing any delivery radius.
It's just rubble. There's nothing to eat but rubble.
So,
rubble delivery.
I had rubble for breakfast. Smelling some stuffed cabbage downstairs.
It's amazing too, because Martin Balsam's like, "Oh, it must be that old Jewish couple. They're the only ones that cook in this building."
What?
Yeah, it makes no sense. So
he invites himself.
Yeah, because they knock on the door. He's like, "Hey, how's it going? I couldn't help but notice it smells delicious in here." And this old woman's like, "Well, you could come have dinner with us if you'd like."
Well, actually, it's we're kind of rationing because the supply lines have been cut. Get your own, man.
We're steaming our own cabbage because we're sick of eating rubble.
This is like West Berlin before they figured out the airlifts.
Yeah, exactly. And here he is mooching one more for dinner, please. And he brings a gun to dinner.
This is awesome. So he goes back upstairs.
He's like, oh, let me clean up first.
Yeah, it's a little starting and stopping with this vigilanteism because he's like, he's telling Martin Balsam, like, all right, I'm about to go out on the streets.
Oh, this
then
is
it's like,
he gets the car, right?
Yeah, he buys a car in cash.
Buys a new car in cash, parks it outside, like right near the window of this old couple.
Oh, he's setting a trap.
I'm going to eat dinner, your dinner, and then I'm going to watch this car, see what happens.
So it's great because he goes back upstairs and he's like, well, better put a suit on for this dinner party. And then he goes to walk out of the room. And he's like, oh, better also bring this gun to the dinner party.
You have to announce if you're bringing a gun to dinner, right? Like, that's a thing. That's
what?
A polite.
No.
That's polite.
Your boiled cabbage smells great. Also, I am packing heat.
Well, if the dinner better be good.
Your life depends on it.
Ooh, this is delicious. By the way, I'm armed. Hey, anyone catch the Yankee game last night?
Charles Bronson in. Kill the cook.
There's too much salt in this bouillabaisse.
Click, click.
Blammo.
So this car does starts to get fucked with, and like he comes out, he's like, hey, that's my car, and they're like, we're gonna kill you, and he just kills like three people immediately.
And this is how you do it. This is the Bronson way. Don't ask any questions. Mm-hmm. Set it up with a light joke, first of all, because he's like, what's wrong with the car? And the guy's like, fuck you, old man. He's like, what's wrong with it? And the guy's like, oh, what do you care? He's like, because it's my car. Gotcha, dead.
Well, it's all entrapment. It's all
I love
weird.
That, though. I love the bait, the yes. whole like, concept of like, I'm going to put my property here if anyone touches it.
Yeah, he gets these two dudes good, man. Their fucking chests explode.
And this is a year after Bernie Getz. I mean, I guess it must have been filmed kind of around the same time that was going on.
Right, so Bernard Getz, of course, for those who are unfamiliar, in the 1980s, he was the subway vigilante. He was sitting on a subway. These teenagers were messing with him, and he pulled out a gun and murdered them all and got off for that.
He murdered some. Some were paralyzed.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, right.
Just,
yeah,
some were just paralyzed.
Yeah. Ooh.
But yeah, it that's not a nice thing.
And I think it was like after that and like kind of when he was doing press for this movie, like Bronson had to come out and be like, by the way, don't do what I do in these movies.
These are fun entertain. It's a white fantasy film. It doesn't work in the real world so much.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, he had to publicly come out and condemn people that like mimicking his character.
So he kills these people. He goes back to dinner, and like the weird thing is the cheering that goes on. Like, and I know that this is a city under siege. It's Police Academy 6. No, I know it's a city under siege, and like blah blah blah. But like, no one's ever cheered anyone for brutally murdering a teenager in the street, right?
No, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
probably
think so.
Not.
Like, what kind of reaction is that? You know, what's funny is I was walking down the street the other day. Cop pulls up and like grabs this dude and starts arresting him. And my reaction was like, oh my God, that poor man.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not cheering this on.
No, I mean, that's at least a lawful thing. This is a guy just murdering, like the Old West, just murdering someone in the goddamn street. And you're like, yay. Well, because the next scene is the giggler, which is the one of the finest scenes. There's this guy that keeps robbing. He's a perch snatcher that would run and laugh.
Right.
And he's later referred to as the giggler. You don't know he's the giggler until after he dies, unfortunately.
That is too bad. I would like to have known him as the giggler while he was giggling.
And that's why Tobo didn't get the part. Like, I need to get in the head of this character. I do not understand. What is the giggler's deal?
Why does he giggle?
And Bronson's kind of trying to get this guy a bunch, but he can't. Like, he's just too old to run after this guy.
Yeah, which makes sense.
So he buys this Nikon camera or just Nikon camera case, and he's like, I'm going down. First, he gets his huge Magnum, fucking horse gun that he gets.
This God Killer. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a We Hate Movies God Killer. He has to like make his own bullets like he's hunting werewolves. That part I don't understand.
Well, it's like because Martin Balsam's like, wow, you make your own bullets too, buddy? And he's just like, yeah, nothing's too good for my guests.
Is he doing like the hollow point? I must have been getting a beer at this point.
No, he's not doing that. I mean, he's just like making his own rounds.
Yeah, like he's like adding gunpowder into shells and shit.
He's like carefully hammering it together.
I'd be terrified. You'd kill yourself probably doing this.
Mm. Or you do it wrong, sure.
Or you put it in the gun and there's too much powder and it blows up the gun. Like my mind works with like, oh, guns. Oh yeah, they can go out the other way too. You never know what's gonna happen.
Well, I just love Paul Kersey, New York socialite, trading in, you know, John Updike for the fucking Turner Diaries and whatever else to get these skills that he wouldn't have as an architect.
So you're suggesting that you can get skills out of the Turner Diaries?
There's some, and whatever else, literally.
It's a very instructional read, Eric.
Right-wing literature.
Yeah, don't Google the Turner Diaries.
You shouldn't.
Yeah, don't do that.
Is this around the time where he sets the bathroom booby trap? For the old people?
Yes. Well, I wanted to finish the giggler. So
he
goes out with a gun, and he's got this Nikon camera. He's like, I'm going out for some ice cream. And he goes and gets ice cream. The giggler grabs his camera, and he shoots him right in the back.
Gets him right in the back. And there's cheering for the giggler's death.
Oh, my God.
This is where the public erupts.
And the funny thing is you come back to the gag, and this one guy's like, they killed the giggler! They killed the giggler! And everyone's like, oh man, the giggler is dead. I was like, is there going to be a new election for the new giggler? Like, is that...
Oh, look, I see white smoke coming out of that crack house. They've selected a new giggler.
It's because, yeah, they grab all the new gang members.
Oh, wow, this is... Wow, the young giggler. And it's not what you think. He's actually pretty conservative.
It's a whole new attitude for the giggler. He's drinking Coke Zero now.
Well, he sure is.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, at one point he sets up this booby trap in the bathroom of this old people's house where like the boy to the nail in it thing I was telling you about, which is great.
Yeah, it's like because people keep like going into their house and stealing stuff, and he's like, I got an idea. Kill them. Which is...
Didn't the guns come by and like take the elderly Jewish couple's gun too at some point? Like,
yeah, they steal their gun and they're like, this is what prompts Bronson to make this booby trap, because they take the gun from them and they're like, by the way, you have to leave this bathroom window open all the time because this is how we're going to get in and rob you.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
He's like, we're coming anytime. Yeah. Anytime.
Bronson is a fan of leaving his window open to trick people again, because he puts down a board with a bunch of crooked nails all over it. And he comes home one day and he like looks at the bathroom floor and you see Bronson smile, and it cuts to the floor and there's just blood everywhere. And he's like, ha-ha, got him.
What a weird thing to be pleased about. This guy is fucking twisted.
He is, man.
It's awesome.
It's the third movie of this shit. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's
remember
awesome.
When I used to go to dinner parties? Now I murder crackheads
and laugh about
dude,
it.
Dude, like his fridge has got to be full of like body parts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Little trophy. I got the giggler's giggler, and it's like his teeth and mouth.
Well, there's the teeth thing with that board though, because he picks this shit out, and the old man's like, what's that? And he goes, these. these are teeth. And it's just two gross front teeth.
Well, I started by killing people for vengeance. Then it was for fun. And obviously now I'm making a sex zombie that I'm just... that's sort of the next logical step.
Bronson as Jeffrey Dahmer?
Absolutely. It would be a real departure for him.
Alternate timeline where Jeffrey Dahmer lived an old life.
Oh,
so it's
yes.
Like Elder Dahmer.
Old Man Dahmer.
Old Man Dahmer. Him in prison. Maybe he gets out and drives a limo.
Yeah, yeah.
Bronson's reading the script and like he gets to like the middle of it. He's like, wait a minute. This guy's gay.
And then there's a little girl who's also a cannibal trying to make sex zombies that starts coming around.
Yeah, exactly.
And Dahmer, old man Dahmer, like grabs the comic book out of her hand. My friend Dahmer, these are just fantasies, kid.
That'd be amazing.
Who would be the Charles Xavier of this situation?
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Maybe Charles Manson?
Oh, yes. It's an old, old Charles right. Manson. Yes, and who thinks he has psychic powers, but he doesn't.
Oh, man.
I can kill the world with my own mind. Better sleep in this silo.
And Calvin is the BTK strangler.
An albino BTK strangler. I like it.
Yeah. What was that guy's name? Dennis Radar or something? Radar?
Oh, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I don't remember. Something like that.
It's a deep cut. So he winds up... we do have to talk about, again, the incredibly... the weird... So the first movie has a rape scene, and that's sort of the inciting incident. And it's a problem, and it's not cool, and there's nothing good about it. But at the very least, it has a narrative function to say, this is what turns the character.
Oh, this is what sets this man over the edge.
It's your classic women in refrigerators thing, where, you know what I mean, this is what's going to make our hero a better person, etc.
And the use of it is, kind of, you know, I mean, in this movie, it's a little egregious. But, like, in that first movie, it's like, this is the most heinous thing you could do.
Yes.
So, no, exactly. that's why.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's the problem. In the third movie, like, not every... Sequels don't need to have every single thing kind of replayed.
No, it does. And bigger and quote-unquote better.
Exactly. That's the thing. So it's Marina Cetris is... going to the grocery store. And then the weird thing is, I guess that they only terrorize people in their neighborhood no matter where they go. Because she's getting in a car and they're like, well, we're still the gang. We're still going to terrorize you even once you leave gang limits.
Well, yeah, you know. Yeah. It's all like...
They don't operate on jurisdiction?
It's like you've committed the offense of daring to go outside, and it's like, we're going to track you down at all costs.
So they grab her, and they tear her shirt off, so we get some cheap, gross TNA. And the weird thing is, so it happens, and like, you know what's going on. They throw her in a car, and you're like, well, she's clearly going to get sexually assaulted. Yeah. But then we have to go back to the crack house and then watch it? Like, for what and for whom?
Because... it's not like Bronson busts in and breaks it up.
Exactly.
They just rape her, and then like she goes to the hospital, and they're like, oh, she's got a broken arm or something. And Bronson is like friends with her brother, and he gets off
friends with her brother.
Yeah. And he gets off the phone, and he's like, oh, it's just a broken arm. Let's go to the hospital. And like when they get there, she's died of like a blood clot that goes to her heart or whatever. But so like...
but it doesn't
you don't need that scene because you don't see anything like avenge-worthy.
No, yeah. It's not like, oh, this was my granddaughter's friend, and now I'm gonna get everybody. Like he doesn't even... he kind of doesn't react. He's like, oh, sucks to be you, man.
Well, yeah, because like he's already started... on his path of vengeance.
Exactly.
He's cold to it. He's just like, oh, a rape and murder. Yeah, I've been through that.
Oh, I hear you.
Must be Tuesday.
Exactly. It's not exactly. Like, he's already avenging Charlie's murder. So, like, that's... in the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, cool. So there's no rape scene. That's nice. And then I was like, No. So that happens. She's just dead. And this... the funny thing is, he's like, oh, it's cool. It's just a broken arm. And the doctor is like... yeah, she expired. And I'm like, really, dude? That's the word we're going to use?
Well, he's trying to keep it as cold and as emotionless as possible.
Yeah, she's passed.
This might be just a crooked doctor, right?
Oh, you think
Like out there, like, you know, the NYPD.
He's still a little upset about the giggler, I think.
The giggler was the guy I got my drugs from. But maybe it's something like, you know, the NYPD wants everyone in this neighborhood to die. And maybe it goes to the mayor.
Sure.
So maybe now the mayor is saying, hey, hospital, Anyone who comes in here doesn't come out.
You know? Oh, wow. I see.
Holy shit.
Like a terror hospital.
Stephen King's terror hospital.
They're all terror hospitals, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
In all those books.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to the hospital in Maine. I'd be like, dude, take me to fucking Rhode Island.
No, dude.
You drive me to Rhode Island right now.
Canada. All the way to Rhode Island?
No, Canada.
Yeah,
Canada.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right there. Yeah. Go to Nova Scotia.
Get some dental work done too. He winds up, so
at some point, by the way, the vengeance has to stop because this 32-year-old woman asks him out on a date.
She follows him to this godforsaken East New York.
Yeah, she pulls up and he's like, "I'm telling you again, I'm not pressing charges," because she's trying to get him to like sue the city, sue the police department.
And then she's like, "Well, would you go on a date with me?" He's like, "Are you blind?" I'm 4 feet tall.
I was literally your age that you are now when you were born.
My face looks like a old jack-o'-lantern you left out for a few months after Halloween. Some kid came by, drew a mustache on it.
So you want to do okay? You're pursuing me.
Let me just clarify once again, because I look like an old basketball with a caterpillar crawling across it. So with that in mind, you would like to take me out to dinner?
I look like a sun-bleached copy of one of my movies that's been left out in a video store. Yet you still want to... Okay, oh, sure.
Just check it. I like clarification.
I look like old man Dama.
So she goes out to... he goes... It's a dinner date.
Dinner at her place, yeah. Man. She's cooking.
And, like, she cooks him something. And they have this really awkward thing, like... He's lying to her. He says he's an out of work writer. Yeah, right. Or maybe he is making some manifesto.
I'm trying to get a book out of all this, all of my trials and tribulations.
It's called The Cursey Diaries.
It's all about how you make these booby traps.
And there's chapters in there about the race war.
it's in two parts.
So
57 pages about booby traps.
Oh, and how recycling is fake. That was one of the lesser cuts of Ted Kaczynski in that manifesto.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for him. So they have this really awkward dinner, and she's like, "Well, I gotta go kill some people." And she's like, "Can I see you again?" And he goes, "Yep." It's the best. And like she like kisses him, which is disgusting.
Oh, it's fucking puke worthy. I couldn't believe it.
And at this point, there's this other guy who's
Cuba?
Yes, who's a known actor. He's in some stuff. I feel
the
like
Gooding, plays Gooding Jr.
No, wish.
It's one of the greatest lines because it's our gang leader there. What are we calling him? Krasinski?
Fraker.
Fraker is like grooming this dude, and he's like, "All right, you're going to go out there and you're going to take a life tonight." And it's just like this, it cuts to this wide shot of the gang hideout, and it's all these people. It looks like all the birds perched up on the shelves at the end of the birds. They're just all watching this happen, and he's like, "Cuba's going to kill tonight." And they're all like, yeah.
For the gig, do it for the giggler.
Get one for the giggler. If you kill him, you're the new giggler. That's how we select the new giggler. Whoever avenges the old giggler becomes the new giggler.
It's just like Santa Claus.
Yes, they're very similar.
No, I thought it was more like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, man. You get chosen once a generation. A giggler is born to fight against the light. Or whatever. So he winds up fighting this guy. He throws him off a building.
And let me tell you right now, every single person associated with making this movie, every one of them signed off on this shot of what is clearly a dummy getting thrown off a roof.
Yep.
It lands on a car and folds over like the soft straw stuffed dummy that it is. And everybody was cool with it.
Yep.
I love it.
It's great. I mean, it's amazing. Nowadays, we got computers. No. This is where it's at.
Just throw a dummy off a building.
Because I know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
And it's funnier, you know? And then I think, oh, they died mid-fall. That's why they're limp.
They died of panic on the way down.
There's a lot of like straight out belly laughs I had during this movie.
Oh, please.
Oh, well, you know, they're not good lines, Steve. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, one of them was, yo, word for a lady.
Oh.
Come here, I want to eat you.
Oh, right. That's an Alex Winter.
Yeah. That's an Alex Winter original right
it
there.
It is like, because we're in Toontown. Like, yes. Nothing about this rings true as a real gang or a real threat.
No.
This is barely a movie, but what a movie.
Hey, speaking of barely a movie, so Steve, remember when you were like, oh, the Cuban, is he played by anybody?
Yeah,
he plays, he's played by an actor who definitely starred in a Batgirl fan film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dude, Batgirl Rises from 2015.
Oh, directed by Josh Whedon.
It's 41 minutes long.
Yeah, it's not Joss Whedon. Josh Whedon is his little cousin.
What the hell kind of name is, what is it, Josh?
Joss.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. It's probably short for something.
Yeah, Josh, maybe.
Yeah, this dude's actually been in a lot of stuff, but nothing, you know, to give you an idea.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Second reporter in Hackers, denied area security guard in Mission Impossible, you know, these kind of things.
He is the man that played denied missionary. Oh, David, it's so funny you remember me as the guy in Hackers.
He was the man who played first man at table in Slipstream.
Oh, Slipstream, man, that's a movie.
It really is.
When you're given... I can't even do the... What was Tobo's thing about, like when you don't have a name, when your character doesn't have a name?
It's the hierarchy. If your character has if he has a first name, that's good. If he has a full name, that's better. If he's only described by his profession, that's really bad.
Right.
Yeah. All right, plumber was a big one. Yes, we talked about.
But I think like if it's like you know Fred the plumber,
yes,
that's kind of a nice little warm mini area.
Joe the plumber, remember that guy?
Oh yeah, sick pull from 10 years ago.
Isn't that
he had some political thoughts?
Isn't that Clint Eastwood's new biopic after Sully?
He's going to be holding a dead baby too.
He's doing all the American heroes. Wait, what's a dead baby with Joe the Plumber?
Well, in the American Sniper, he's holding that doll that's a real baby.
Exactly. The Death Wish theory of like, put a dummy in there, man. Right.
But dude, imagine an American Sniper like gruff Clint Eastwood directed movie.
Right.
About a guy snaking a toilet out.
Oh, and somehow it's also 2.5 hours long.
And then also posting on Facebook some racist shit.
So, at this point, sort of like...
this is where Martin Balsam tries to use a machine gun and fucks it up.
Because he's got some shop, and like... There's some correlation between like the gang is upset with the old people because they're fighting back, so that they're like trying to cut their head off a little bit.
I mean, they want total control of the neighborhood.
Right. Sure. I think the gang is working for the landlords.
Oh, I see.
These old guys got these rent stabilized joints.
That's a good point.
To go market rate.
You can't burn a building to the ground if it's rent controlled. So, Martin Balsam owns like an auto body shop and they light it on fire. And like, that's the last straw. They definitely use the same shot like 3 times Martin Balsam being like, that's my shot. That's my shop. Like, they keep cutting back to him.
Well, there's this funny thing because he, at a certain point, very much like our friend in Falling Down, is like, hey, Kersey, I want to show you what I got in this closet. It's this huge, like, machine gun, a couple of machine guns. And,
right.
And he's like, oh, Kersey is just like, well, that's not for you, little man. Leave that to me.
Those were Charlie's.
Look, you're 66. You're far too old to deal with that. I'm 64.
This is a perfect job for a 64-year-old.
66. Easy, Grandpa. I got this one.
But yeah, he's Martin Balsam's like, yeah, these are Charlie's machine guns. He brought them back from the war. I was like, can you just take guns home from the war like that? I don't know how that works.
So was that Charlie's plan? Like, let me bring this, like, you know, I'm getting fucked with. My friend's a psychopath. Like, I met him on some old school message board. Like,
what is that? Like a zine? They were like corresponding in the letters section?
Exactly.
That must have been it. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to get this guy. We're like pen pals. He's fucking crazy.
Hey, irritated in East New York. It's me, lascivious in Los Angeles. I'll help you take out the garbage, if you know what I mean.
I'm coming home. But yeah, he's just
in
got
the,
this.
The next issue, publish your address.
Exactly. This is exactly how this went down. Oh, man. It must have taken forever.
Mm-hmm. That's why Charlie was dead when he got there.
But do you get a parting gift for participating in war?
Well, you do get to keep some shit. I don't think you... This was like a machine gun off the back of a Jeep. I don't think that goes...
But there it's got two of them.
There were tons of guys that brought back like bayonets and Nazi stuff. And
I mean, I feel like...
Wait, more Nazi stuff. Let's see what else we brought back. Oh, wait, more Nazi stuff.
Weird. No, I mean, I feel like if you know the guy that's checking your bag, you go, hey, Charlie, don't worry about that.
Don't worry about this bag that clearly has two machine guns in it.
And this was also, you know, they had security wasn't invented until 2001. So,
That's also true. So Martin Balsam's like, I'm going to use this gun even though Charles Bronson said I shouldn't. And he goes, and sure enough, like he's about to spray all these people.
This is great. All these guys are like, oh my God, he's got a gun. And everyone's running. The gang's running. And then it jams.
Yes, and then they go, it jammed. Let's go get him.
Kill that guy. they all charge him. It's
like a horde of zombies. They run up the fire escape and grab this old man and throw him down multiple staircases.
Which is great.
They beat him a little bit. And you think he's dead, but unfortunately he's not. Yeah. At this point, Bronson gets arrested because his girlfriend gets killed, right? Is that what happens?
Well, there's some sex.
Oh, please.
While Martin Balsam is being brutalized by this gang, Bronson is getting it wet with this kid.
Hey, look, I look like a building that should have been condemned 4 years ago. You want to have sex with, you young lithe woman would like to have sex with me. I just want to be clear about that.
My face looks like a microwave walnut. Thank God there isn't a sex scene.
Oh yeah,
I wish there was.
No way, dude. You'd still be puking right now.
You do get shirtless Bronson, and I'm like, man, he's in better shape than me.
Yeah. That's something.
Yeah.
But so what happens is, like, I guess it's like, well, we just fucked. How about some ice cream? And like, they go outside, and he like goes into a store. Meanwhile, the gang comes up. They punch this woman in the head.
Hold on. He doesn't go to a store. He goes to his mailboxes, etc.
Oh, is
to
that
get
what it
more
is?
Guns.
He's right.
Like, I got to get it. Hold on. I know we're going out for a post-sex bite to eat, but I do need to pick up a few more guns.
I didn't realize it was the mailbox, etc. I thought it was like, you know...
Convenience store
or something. But anyway, yeah. So Gavin O'Hurley, he punches this woman in the face. She gets knocked out cold. They release the parking brake on this car, and this woman just goes bye-bye.
The car explodes.
It's
ridiculous. I had three bazookas in the back.
Oh, wait, that might make sense.
That's exactly what
happened. That's the only way that this makes sense, because the car just has like a little... It's like a gentle T-boning, and then there's a massive explosion, and it just lights her up.
I had all that thermite in the back. That's how I was going to get rid of my cockroach problem.
Didn't tell her that I had a... and the Russian warhead in the back.
I got it off my zine.
So he just walks up to this car. He says nothing. You know, he doesn't even look that distraught, and just turns around like, oh well, better get back to it.
And he gets arrested, or the cops pick him up for some reason. The detective's like, you know, you're getting too hot, you know what I mean, that there's too much stuff going on. And there's this weird thing where he's like, so now I'm going to charge you with stuff, but then, Martin Balsam will actually identify the gang,
right?
If only Kersey goes to talk to him.
Right, it's like, oh, he'll only speak to you. So Ed Lauder, rather, is like begrudgingly letting him out of prison to do this.
And he goes to the hospital and sneaks out the window, essentially. Balsam's like, well, hey, the third act is here. You want to sneak out the window and have the third act?
Better go sneak into that third act.
I'll tiptoe right into it.
The scene is bullshit, too, because they now are acting like they're the best of friends. And he's like, I'm sorry I messed it up, buddy. I tried and I just cocked it right up. And
also,
he's like,
he should have been dead.
Yeah, he should have died.
Because it doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean? You're killing women left and right. Kill this old fuck.
Yeah. There's some couple that gets set on fire at some point. Is that the old Jewish couple?
It's not the old Jewish couple, but it's during, like, the siege of the neighborhood.
This is
basically
where it gets crazy. So Bronson comes out
war.
He's like, all right, I'm taking it to him, and he gets a bazooka at a certain point.
He saves that for later.
Marina Cetris's boyfriend or brother, I don't know which, is like, he's like, I'm into this too. We're gonna take down the city. And like, you can't have Balsam and this guy. Like, have one of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
you don't need Balsam is the thing.
It gets confusing. So then, like, he's like with him, and you're like, where have you been for most of the movie? He's like, I was around.
Well, he's been grieving, of course.
So they're like, he's helping him load up all this stuff. And like, the funny thing is, Bronson has got like 17 guns on him. And like, the guy is just like, well, all I got is my zip gun. And Bronson's, which is kind of obviously a leading question of like, can I borrow one of your guns,
yes,
buddy?
Yes, exactly.
And he's like, well, that should take out a few of them.
Well, tough titty.
Look, I believe you gotta buy your own guns, pal. That's how it works.
Why haven't you been stocking up on guns already?
This is your own problem. You are the grasshopper. I am the ant, or however that shit goes. I'm the squirrel, and you're something else.
Well, he hates handouts.
Exactly.
Know,
and this guy's
welfare
like,
state.
This guy's ready to go to war with him, and he's just like, oh man, could you hold some of these guns, not use them, and give them to me later?
He just holds the box of ammo for the machine gun.
Yeah.
Oh man, and this machine gun rips this town apart.
At this point, Gavin O'Hurley, he calls someone and gets the reinforcements.
Yeah, he gets on the phone and he's like, yeah, this is Crockett or whatever his name is.
Fraker.
Oh, Fraker. I don't know where I got Crockett from.
He's got Tubbs on the line.
Yeah.
Hey, Tubbs, can you send some gang reinforcements? So then, like, this motorcycle gang shows up. It's kind of a great moment because
these
it's like.
He might be the swastika guys.
He calls up another movie and then another movie. It's like the end of Blazing Saddles. Like, these other movies start showing up.
Psychomania drives through.
Yeah.
It's so awesome because it's like a nice little family reunion because all these gang members are like, oh, I haven't seen you in forever. Like, all these gang members are hugging people. Yeah. It's so awesome.
And they lay siege to the city at this point.
Yeah,
and
it's just all bets are off. Yeah,
they beat up some fat guy and then light him on fire in the middle of the city.
They're lighting a lot of people on fire, dude. They light up that old couple, and it's like this woman is on fire and falling down the stairs. Holy shit, it's great.
And like Gavin O'Hurley, he's just like spraying people with this like little submachine gun he's got.
That's a nice little like Bond thug weapon kind of a thing.
Isn't there like a car that goes by at one point full of punks?
Yeah, and Bronson lays waste to them.
Just Bonnie and Clyde's these people.
Yep, it's great.
It's amazing.
I like his Magnum, but again, I do want to see some headshots. I do want to see some Gallagher splats.
You know what? Honestly, at this point in the movie, there's so much going on. They just like say, nah, no blood.
Yes.
Some of these are no blood.
This should be like a trauma movie, though.
It should really, it practically is.
These buckets. I mean, the budget obviously looks like a trauma movie. The set looks like a trauma movie.
Yeah. No. Well, we had to go to England, man. At least trauma films on the streets of New York. They have the decency to film on the streets.
Trauma made in America.
That's right.
In the third movie, do I team up with the Toxic Avenger or what?
Man, I would hope in that movie he kills the Toxic Avenger because enough already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You're not wrong.
Toxie should have been buried with Bronson.
Actually, that would have been great. A movie where it's Charles Bronson teaming up with Lloyd Kaufman.
Yes.
What are you, Ninja Turtle?
Oh, yes. And Lloyd Kaufman as a Ninja Turtle.
No, Lloyd Kaufman is a Splinter, and Toxic Avenger's a Ninja Turtle.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I like it.
Isn't that how that works?
I think so.
I don't know. I never really watched this
I never
movie.
Saw it. I watched the cartoon.
Woo.
Yeah, I probably watched the cartoon. I mean, I've seen some of those movies. Listen, they're all terrible.
Didn't know there was a cartoon.
There was a cartoon.
That's really disturbing. For children, you're
for
saying.
For children, it's probably a Stay Tuned for Animation Damnation.
I think it should definitely be an Animation Damnation, which is on our Patreon, by the way.
There you go. So this is the movie, really. It's all out carnage. It's why you watch this movie.
This is what you're waiting for, is the last 20 minutes.
It's just nonstop wall-to-wall violence.
They actually burn down a building at one point. Like, they just, the gang burns this building to the ground. You watch this structure actually fall over.
It's getting so comical, it's ridiculous. He just, like, Bronson shoves a game genie up his ass. God mode.
Exactly.
The funny, they do it a lot in this movie. Like, every time Bronson is shot, he goes and looks, oh yeah, luckily I still have this bulletproof vest,
yeah,
and I don't respect the audience enough to not tell them that.
I keep checking on this bulletproof vest. Yep, still there.
Luckily, before I play GTA, I do back left, up down, 1-1, right left, Now I've got God mode.
That's what I need, is somebody like just, you know, mod GTA 3, an older one, and yes. put a little Charles Bronson in there.
Oh, God, that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody get on that.
Figure it out.
That'd be pretty cool.
But, I mean, like, yeah, he's just murdering everybody. But the weird thing is, Gavin O'Hurley, he calls for reinforcements, but not to really... It is to kill Bronson, but it's not like, okay, there's this one little guy, he looks like Splinter if he was a person. Like, he looks like a rat, but not really. That's the guy. That's... Kill him first, and then we'll do everything else. Like,
right.
Let's all converge, because this guy's giving me problems.
Like, but he's tired of it, Steve. This is just a full-on war now.
Okay.
And it's full-on war, and now the citizens also decide they're going to step it up. And they're going to help take back the streets. So you see all these great shots of all these old people going to their drawers and getting a gun out.
Yes.
And then hitting the streets to kill people. And it's amazing.
It's amazing. We get some more unsolicited boobs of this lady that Bronson saves.
Oh, yeah. Someone's in the middle of all this. They're like, well... You know, we're terrorizing this neighborhood, but what would a good gang riot be without sexual assault?
For sure, yeah.
So get that in there.
Yeah, just to, you know. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. I mean, like, how does Alex Winter die? I forget.
Oh, he's about to shoot Bronson, then out of nowhere, Ed Lauder like comes around the corner and kills this dude, and he's like, "Now you owe me," or well, whatever. He says,
"You owe me for that one, dude."
Oh yeah, hey dude, I got this. Got this one, dude. Got this guy for you, dude.
This is a weird Ed Lauder character.
Who's Dirty Undies, dude?
Weird character trait for him is he hates cockroaches, quote unquote, and like, but he's still like crushing them with his hands, which is kind of disgusting.
Well, because he likes to feel the life exit their body.
And that's when Charles Bronson says something very Turner Diaries-esque. He's like, well, it's like you got to kill, it's like killing cockroaches. It doesn't make sense to just kill one. You've got to kill them all.
Right, which then the movie doesn't do, because once Gavin O'Hurley is inevitably murdered at the end of this movie, the riot shuts off.
Well, we have to talk about that.
Oh, of course. It's famous. I think this scene is famous. It's like cinema famous.
Really?
Yeah.
It's got a star on the Walk of Fame.
Might as well, dude.
Fraker's death.
Listen, man, when we went to L.A., we checked out that Walk of Fame, and listen, some of the people that made it on that fucking thing, this explosion should be on there. This explosion should have a star. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The Beatles?
I mean, come on. Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, totally.
It's a shame what they did. That man's beautiful star. It's a shame.
I know. I mean, they should be in Gitmo.
Yeah.
Which we should, you know, it's never closed.
Yeah.
We should expand it.
Well, or we should just put Secret Service on his star as well. We might as well spread it out.
I think so. I mean, it's one of his immediate family members.
So Fraker goes into Bronson's apartment. Fraker, and now it's Bronson and Lauder there too.
They've teamed up.
They've teamed up. They're taking down the street. They take down like half the world together.
It's a lot of Bronson picking people off on fire escapes, which is pretty great. Mm-hmm. That's where it gets most video gamey.
Yeah.
He's like, definitely. Got you.
There is
a just won Duck Hunt.
Yeah. Oh, man, he needs a little dog to like go and grab the corpse.
This dog's just dragging the giggler back across the street.
Oh, the new giggler got it too. Oh
yeah, man. Dude. Man, now there's gonna be like a worldwide search for the new giggler, like the Buddha or whatever.
Yeah, the Dalai Lama.
Sorry.
The giggler was just reborn somewhere in Africa. We have to go get him.
I will kill all the subsequent gigglers.
I will kill a giggler in the cradle in order to prevent another purse snatching. Excuse me.
So in comes this dude. Here comes Fraker, man. And he's like ready to take Bronson to hell. And then like Lauder's there. And it's kind of like, which one am I going to kill? And he turns to Lauder. And then Bronson takes out this fucking rocket launcher, man.
A rocket launcher. I mean, this is where the movie gets a little political. He pulls a rocket launcher out of the American flag, by the way. And then sends this dude, blows off half of the building.
It's like you see Bronson takes this thing out of the flag. It's like a split second shot of him firing it. And then we cut outside and the side of this building just shoots out. Oh, God, it's awesome.
I will say,
how did he not get like a brick in his pumpkin face after, from like this explosion doesn't harm him or the cop.
Well, no. That's what I'm saying. If you're about to do that, you got to say, "Hey, man, get out of the way! I'm about totally. To blow up half of my."
Well, no,
building.
You need the element of surprise.
There, oh, that's so. True. Yeah.
But yeah, so then you see like this dude's charred remains laying in the street. Which
how
is
does
awesome.
Anyone even know who this is? Everyone's like, "Oh no, they got Fraker." I'm like, "How do you? It's fucking Aunt Beru. You know nothing about this."
Well, it's amazing, man, because like he must have had some sort of mind control over all of them, because like all of the gang just shuts off. It's like, "Oh hey man, Fraker's dead," and they all just go.
Yes.
Well, and also, they all just leave.
Their numbers have been depleted to such a degree.
Right.
And now, you know, the commander in the field has been killed. So, like,
that's it.
They
retreat.
Exactly. They have no other recourse at this point.
And it's kind of awesome. They all take off, and like, all the neighborhood's like fucking cheering and everything.
What neighborhood? There's nothing left.
Yeah. I mean, now they're all just homeless. At least the gang's not there anymore, but also they're homeless.
And at one point, the laundromat blows up. Man, that sucks. That's why you move someplace. It's like, "Oh, there's a laundromat right around the corner." Oh, they
right
they,
around the corner.
The gang blew it up.
Well,
shit.
Nothing ever happened. Nothing bad ever happened again in East New York. So everything is good.
The last line is Ed Lauder. The sirens start. The cops finally get there, and yep. Lauder is like, "I'll give you a head start." And, you know, it's like a knowing wink. And then
right. This is like the Dark Knight.
Yes. We have to chase him.
Paul Kersey. He's not the hero. You know, he's the hero we deserve, or whatever the fuck that's.
He's the pumpkin head we deserve. Oh, man. Charles Bronson as Pumpkinhead.
Oh, shit.
Is that a
dude.
Batman villain?
No.
The horror film.
Henriksen yeah. movie.
All right. We were talking about the Dark Knight.
Just jumping around.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a pumpkin head.
There should
Batman.
Be a pumpkin head. Yeah.
"Hey, Pumpkinhead, I'm going to get you and the Riddler tonight. I'm going to blow out your candle, Pumpkinhead." It's a trick candle in there. It's not going out. You got a trick candle in there, Pumpkinhead, or what? Oh. You're next, the Giggler.
And yeah, whatever. Kersey packs his suitcases and literally, I mean, this movie's like a Western, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, "All right, well, the gang's all dead and the sheriff's giving you some time to get out of here."
And Martin Balsam is just like, "I guess I won. Okay."
You don't see him out of the hospital, though, do you?
No, but I mean, like, there's nothing. Yeah. The building is condemned at this point.
During the end credits, the doctor should come back and be like, "He expired."
That's the stinger scene. Yes. It's just Martin Balsam's death report.
I like that.
And yeah, Kersey just takes his two suitcases and walks off into the sunset, man, ready to kill another day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not even going to pretend to retire at this point.
There's no line about like, "All right, that's it for me." Like nothing. It's just like, "Yeah, I might do this again.
I'm going to get out of here. Are those breakfast bars spoken for? I'm just going to pack them up. Get a little lonely at the Port Authority. I don't want to have to get a sandwich there.
Going
to
go look for trouble at the Port Authority." And yeah, that's it. Freeze frame eventually through the credits. There's awesome music throughout this entire thing. It's done by Jimmy Page, by the way.
It's not
that Jimmy Page?
No, it is that Jimmy Page. Apparently he did Death Wish 2, but then they just sort of mauled his score for this next one.
Oh, is that what it is?
He had no involvement. I guess he got money for it because it was his score, but they just probably paid some kid with a fucking Casio to spice it up some. But the music is fantastic.
It's really great.
And all over the place.
Yeah, it's like totally inappropriate most of the time. Uh-huh. It's way too upbeat for what you're watching.
Absolutely.
At the beginning, there's definitely some sexy jazz music all over the place. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fucking great.
City's alive, my friend.
And that's Death Wish 3. Would anybody recommend it?
Oh, yeah, it's a hard recommend. I recommend most of this series, even though it's ridiculous and problematic with a capital P. But, you know, it's Charles Bronson. He's just fun to watch be unanimated while killing people, which is fun.
It's just what you want, man. A soulless killer. Mm-hmm. No regret in him whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. You know,
yeah.
You know, you get your problematic on. It's a nice little afternoon or evening.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch this movie any time of the day, it turns out.
You really can, actually.
Well, you know, when you're hungover, you could watch it. When you're feeling good, you know, when you're feeling groovy, you could watch it too, man.
You want to have yourself a Saturday night, you pop this on?
Sure.
I was feeling pretty groovy when I watched this movie last night, well into the witching hour.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's why I was... Dicey on Details.
Eric Siska's new comedy special, Dicey on Details.
That's Death Wish 3, directed by Michael Winner. If you want more WHM, check out our website or visit us over at the HeadGum site. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We are at WHM Podcast. And, of course, right into that mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. Rate and review the show wherever you get it. We would greatly appreciate it. Next week on the show, what do we got going on?
It's our 300th episode.
Oh, shit, that's right. Can you believe it?
Lord. Are we going to say what it is? We usually do, right? I mean, people like to watch along.
It is our 300th episode.
So it's 300, yeah.
Yeah.
It's our 300th episode, yeah.
Yeah, it's as on the nose as we could possibly get with 300. Zack Snyder's.
Zack Snyder's.
Oh, I thought we were going to tease him. But yes, it is Zack Snyder's 300.
So next week on the show, we celebrate 300 episodes on the air. So until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska. Chris Gabin is on assignment.
Take it easy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.